Good afternoon, St. Louis. DGS on KMOX. Happy Tuesday to you. Boy, just going to be a busy show. Tons of stuff going on. Start information that at 1:30 Central St. Louis time, they will be doing an official press conference about the cargo ship hitting the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. We'll carry that for you. These days, I'm up not as early as Amy, but I'm typical 5 to 6 a.m. So it only happened a couple hours before that. And it was so strange. Like, I'm the only one up and just bizarre. Like, am I still dreaming? This seems like a dream. This is weird. Sadly, there are already conspiracy theories out there. And look, if you watch really close, you can see the explosion before. We've got to rein this in.
Yeah,
we really do. That's being valued more than people having a conscience or telling the truth. Just, you know, if you can spin a great yarn, if you can effectively lie, that's become more valuable in politics than what we used to value, which was the George Washington,
I chopped down the cherry tree. Yep.
Crap.
Yep. And well, I think it's because it's so much easier now to make up your own truth, right? I mean, you can create your own reality, especially politically. You can create your own political reality because the vast majority of us don't have the time or take the time to look things up. Mm-hmm. So if somebody says X, Y, and Z are because of this particular elected official, people that agree with the person saying it are like, yeah, it's on them, and they're not going to bother to look. And then other people that would disagree with them will look and say, hey, wait a minute, that's not really true. But nobody hears that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. You can substitute one party for the other. It's just too easy to do that. It's too easy to keep people in the dark.
I wish everyone not only understood but valued the burden of proof the way that people in the legal field do. That if I say to Kevin, hey, I saw a Sasquatch in my driveway, then the burden of proof is on me to bring some sort of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And if Kevin says, I don't believe you, that's reasonable. And we just don't do that. The person making the claim has the burden of proof, and the crazier the claim, the bigger the burden of proof you need. And we don't seem to even understand that anymore.
It's funny because it didn't necessarily start as a political phrase, but I remember when I was young, like grade school into high school, but really grade school, I started hearing that phrase, like, live your truth, find your truth. But it was mainly like younger people and validating every experience and every emotion we have is the most important emotion and experience in the history of the world, and live your truth. Because there was even that flirtation with in tests, like, what do you feel like the answer should be? I remember that clear as day. I mean, that was one reason why we homeschooled. I remember that there was flirting with that. And what's funny is I feel like that mentality, which at that time, because I was a kid, felt so focused on young people, that reality now is how we live as a nation. What do you feel is true? Find your truth. Live your truth. Truth is completely relative to whatever it is that you want. Your emotions are truth. Your experience is truth. And I can tell you, there is nothing less true than emotions. You may feel sad, but that's a feeling. Emotions are fickle. Emotions are very fickle. And that's why when we want to build resilient kids, you have to teach them, do not be ruled by your emotions. But what do you know is true? What do you believe? And what I mean by that is you may feel sad at losing a game, but you know, you can keep working and keep practicing rather than that emotion you have now encompasses all of reality. And it's like that has now moved into every sphere that every adult and boomers, not just kids who grew up in that age, but boomers live their truth, and their truth is it. Yeah. What does that even mean? Truth isn't truth if it's just whatever we think is true.
It feels like we all remember the first time our parents left us and went even just to Kmart and we were with our buddies and you're like, oh my God, we can do anything we want. And you do. And that's just how it feels. The world just kind of feels like all the adults have been raptured or something.
Yeah, well, I think a lot about it because we talk about these things a lot. And I think I have an analogy that works that makes sense, even though it's terrible and shouldn't be this way. Forever, until recently, until the last 20 years, we had a very limited number of places where you could get information, right? You're getting it on your network evening news, your local evening news, the newspapers that are going to be brought, but that requires like reading in it and, you know, like not just pierce the headline, throw it away. Like it was reading it. Well, now you have a million choices and you can pick what fits you. And the analogy I came up with is like music, right? I'm a metal guy. I know nothing about what's happening in the country music world. I don't know anything. I don't know who's a big star. I don't know who's selling the most records. I don't know who's in a controversy. I don't know anything. And that's how we are with everything else now. Not just our entertainment where you're just like, there's no connection. Like if you're a hardcore Democratic thinker, you are not in the silo on the right with the Republican thinkers and they're not in the silo with you.
It's a good analogy.
And that's the problem. There's no agreed upon, like you'll never, like I'm a metal guy. You're never going to get me to say, yes, that country singer is just as good as my favorite metal band. I'm never going to agree to that. And they're never going to agree the other way around, but it doesn't matter. It's just entertainment. That's what we're doing with important things.
It's a good analogy. I like it. Let's talk a little sports. One thing the Cardinals couldn't afford is to lose any more outfielders. So two of our best outfielders run full steam into each other.
Yeah, so obviously Nute Barr's already down. He's not too far away from being back. Like he started swinging the bat and stuff, so probably a couple weeks for him. And then Tommy Edman, we have no idea. It's probably going to be at least a month, it sounds like. But we'll see beyond that. Then last night in the second-to-last exhibition game before the regular season, Dylan Carlson and Jordan Walker are going for a ball. Now, this is a ball that is like probably a 5 to 10% catch percentage. Like this ball is again, it's very difficult, right? Mm-hmm. It landed on the warning track, deep right center field, both guys going for it. Walker dives and then Carlson trips over him, falls, injures his shoulder. So now he's got a sprained AC joint, which means he is out for some period of time. I'd say that knowing that injury, probably at least a month. So, you know, if you figure, and that's in a good case scenario, if it's a relatively minor sprain, because being his left shoulder, it's his throwing shoulder. So he would have to get that back to something normal, not like a pitcher, but something normal where he could play the outfield. That's going to be at least, I would think, a 3 or 4 week process. And so, that doesn't count missing time hitting. So Victor Scott's coming.
Well, I'm excited by that.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that. Now, one of the first things I thought, not understanding professional baseball, but having played enough sports, that in the preseason and the practices, like, hey, don't be hitting each other as hard as you can in practices in football.
right.
And I thought on this one, like, boys, don't dive. Just,
man,
take it. And I know you have to practice. You know, and I know you have to play your best and instincts kick in, but man.
That is not a wrong instinct on your part. It's not wrong. It's obviously case dependent, right? So like looking at those two guys in particular. Dylan Carlson is trying to show that he deserves to be an everyday player at the major league level. And making that kind of play with some regularity would go a long way toward helping him do that. Jordan Walker is trying to get better as a right fielder. He was one of the worst outfielders in baseball last year. What he's working on is making plays like that. So you don't practice that. You don't go practice diving, you know, during drills. Like you're not doing that. So game time is really the only time you're going to be dealing with that. But if it were two veteran players, I think that would be the thought. And I bet you if it was two guys that have been around a bit, like if it was Jim Edmonds and Brian Jordan, ball probably falls in a spring training game and they probably let it go when they're veteran players, right, as they're older players. But younger guys have stuff to prove and stuff to work on and stuff to learn, and it's just a terrible break.
Okay, let's do this quick. Let's go around the field.
Yep.
So we know who's going to be catcher. We know first base. We know shortstop. We know third base. Second base, Gorman?
Gorman and Donovan.
Right.
It'll be a split of them. And Donovan will also play left field. He'll also DH. Gorman will also DH. But those two will both play every day.
Walker right field. From there.
Well, Victor Scott's going to play center.
Okay.
He's not coming here to sit and watch. He's going to come and play center field. And at the very least, what you're getting is elite defense. So even if he doesn't hit at all, he's one of the fastest guys in the sport. He might be one of the fastest guys in sports, period. I mean, he's got track star speed.
Mm-hmm.
So the worst case you have is a guy that is a great defensive center fielder. And if he hits, then, oh boy, you got some fun because people that know it know he stole 112 bases last year.
And does he hit at his level?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. And he hit in the Arizona Fall League last fall, which is all the best young players get together and go there from multiple levels. So he hit well there, and he hit well in the spring. He's not a big power guy. What you're hoping for is that he hits for enough batting average to have a good on-base percentage. If he gets on base 30, 4% of the time he's going to be a stud. If it's more than that, he's going to be way more of a stud. If it's less than that, then it's less of an impact. Because if he's on base, he's a threat. He's going to steal.
Left field?
Left field, mix. Could be Donovan on a given day. It could be Alec Burleson. But probably those two guys for the time being. And then, you know, on a day, some days like Matt Carpenter will DH, things like
Edmund
that.
Edmund must be going nuts.
Oh,
I mean, because he's not even doing physical therapy, right? He's just resting it.
Well, they're doing rehab stuff, but he's not swinging a bat. And the most frustrating thing for him has to be this. They did this surgery like in October.
Yeah.
Like this isn't something they did in February. Like this is something that's been for months. But wrist injuries are really tough for hitters.
What do we know about Sonny Gray?
Sounds like it's still short term, right? Like I think he's facing minor league hitters on Thursday, like in a scrimmage, like in a game setting, mm-hmm. a simulated game setting. And then it's right now it sounds like he's healthy. It's just a matter of building up stamina to start a game, right? So he's probably at a point where he could throw 40 pitches. Well, that's not enough.
He's not a big guy.
No, Sonny's not a tall guy. He's 5'9", 5'10". Yeah, something like that. Still throws hard though.
Yeah, sure does.
Give him a lot of credit. It's funny because pitchers like the Cardinals pitchers typically they always had a mid-major basketball lineup, right? Like Adam Wainwright is 6'7" and Michaelis is 6'5" and Flaherty was like the short guy last year at 6'3". Steven Matt's like 6'3". Lance Lynn is 6'5". Michael's still big like that. Kyle Gibson is 6'4", 6'5". So typically right-handed pitchers tend to be really tall. It's a bias that scouts have. And there's some reason for it. I mean, it's not like it's totally unreasonable. But yeah, Sonny is one of the exceptions, the under 6 foot righty.
Let's talk to Mark here on line one. Mark, thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, since I was a kid, I was always told that you call the ball. And how can these idiots be in the pros and not call for a ball?
You can't call for a ball that you don't know you're going to get to. And neither one of them got there. You cannot call for a ball if you don't know you're going to get there. That's the first thing every coach will tell you. If you call it, you better get there. And neither got there. The ball hit the ground. They didn't collide full speed running, and it was because that was a ball that you don't call. You cannot call a ball that you might have to dive for. That doesn't. When you say ball, 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 mine, I got it, I got whatever. You say that, that means you know you have it. Neither of them knew they had it. That ball landed on the warning track. It was a bomb. That's not how that works.
122 DGS, 130, we have a press conference on the ship that ran into the bridge. We'll find out everything. So creepy to watch this happen, as I understand it. And again, the press conference is in, 8 minutes. But there was a distress call that went out from the ship, and it was in time that they could close the bridge. But there were still vehicles, because you can see it as the ship is, probably 100 yards or less. You see these cars going by, and a couple of them just make it literally by 2 or 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that nuts? Just the apparent randomness of life that anyone's ever had a car accident, you can't help afterwards thinking, had I brushed my teeth 1 minute longer or 1 minute less or had a muffin or not had a muffin, this wouldn't have happened. Imagine being that person just crossing the bridge at 1 a.m. and you see a ship and you're like, that's awfully close. Mm-hmm. And then you cross it and the whole thing falls.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think everyone to varying degrees has a story like that. But I have a good running buddy who in 2001, for like that entire year, every week took the flight from Boston to California. Every week took that flight, that American Airlines flight, and was going to take that same flight that he always took. But by chance, his wife, who was a doctor, got called in and had to work a double shift. And working a double shift, someone had to stay home with the kids. So he stayed home. And that was the plane that crashed into the second tower. And that was the flight he took every single week that year. Every single week.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Just nuts. Kind of similar to that. I had a doctor's appointment this morning out in Chesterfield. And there was a big accident on 40 East. And it was like literally a mile long. And I just kept thinking, there are 1,000 stories. People who have an interview, mm-hmm. people who are having coffee with someone they have a crush on, people who are trying to reconcile their marriage, like whatever. There are 1,000 stories of things that got dicked up because of that one accident.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And that's part of the reason why it infuriates me when protesters shut down highways or bridges, because and multiply it even too, because those things were taking half a day as opposed to whatever time it takes. Because, yeah, there are doctors on their way to perform surgery. You know, there are all kinds of things. There could be a pregnant woman on her way to the hospital to have a baby. And when it's an accident, it's an accident, it's an accident. But that's why the protesters piss me off.
And also, maybe I'm just, I don't know, don't care or something. But not only have I never been moved by one of those things, stop oil or whatever it happens to be, but it just hardens me against them.
Yeah.
They could be doing puppy rescue, but if they do something like that, I'm like, you know what? Screw puppies. I'm tired of those anyway. Like, it just doesn't, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, because when you do something like that, to Kevin's point, people who maybe are on their way to have a baby, they have to go to work, they're trying to support their family. The protesters who illegally shut down highways come across as so self-important and so arrogant, so sanctimonious to say that this mission right now is more important than anything that you ignorant people have to do, including getting to the hospital to perform surgery or have a baby or meet with a family member or go to work to support your family. It's very unserious and it's incredibly ignorant. And I think they should be arrested when you shut down a highway.
And it doesn't help when they're 12. Like, you know, my daughter's 19 and she's an adult. I treat her like an adult. I listen to her opinions. However, if I saw her out somewhere taping her hand to a Monet, I'd be like, you stupid kid.
Yeah.
Well, and it does seem, though, speaking of art, like the environmental activists, the climate change activists are the most unserious, because throwing tomato soup on a famous painting does nothing for your cause and makes you come across like a clown, honestly.
Yeah.
It hurts
your
cause.
Think about it, though, Dave, like using the analogy with Phoebe, or I could use the same thing with my daughter, Shannon. If your first move when your kid does something like that is to start screaming at them and telling them they're idiot children, they are tuning you out, which is what everybody's doing.
You just made their case.
Right. And that's what they're doing to all of us with their actions. How you deliver a message will be part of how it's received. It's not just the actual core of it. And that's what the people that are doing those things don't understand. And I'm not saying you got to take a PR class or anything, but if you want to, like, cause a disruption, you do it where decision makers are. Go to DC, go to your state capitol, go to City Hall. Like, that makes sense, because you're actually putting the message to the people that can do something about it. You're not just jacking up the lives of thousands of people that have nothing to do about any of it.
Yeah. Welcome back, guys. DGS 134. So you guys have figured it out by now. When we do these press conferences, we're just at their mercy. And our understanding is they're going to do a press conference, the first one that they've had about this container ship hitting the bridge in Baltimore. But it's 134 and we don't have a sign of them. So we're going to continue on. And then we will awkwardly and abruptly go right into the press conference and then come back and try to salvage it. Let's talk about Caitlin Clark. So I'll tell my story first. I know, Wheels, you had some them too. Caitlin Clark is the star of stars in women's college basketball. And last night, her team, Iowa, was playing West Virginia. And I watched a good half, which, like Amy was saying, she watched the last couple minutes, which was a lot of women's college basketball. I just don't watch that much, but I obviously know who she is. And the story and the all-time leading scorer. She's also, I would think, a bit divisive, with as intense as she is and screaming at the refs and just brrr, right? And I was just hating her. I didn't know going in, am I going to love her? Am I not? Am I going to root for her? Am I going to root against her? So I was solidly rooting against her. Oh my God, hated this person. And I'm by myself and I'm just watching it and I'm thinking, why do you hate her? And so I decided to be honest with Dave, and I'm like, well, you hate her because she just seems to know how good she is, and like her, you know what, doesn't stink. Mm-hmm. And then other Dave's like, well, it doesn't. She's pretty good. And also, by the way, Weenie, if you had a tenth of her talent, you would be completely insufferable. So I came full circle. I still was rooting for the underdog, but I had a little come to Jesus with myself.
Yeah.
Because I realized this person you've known, quote unquote, for 18 minutes, you're completely judging and hating on because you're just jealous and intimidated. That's it.
I was telling Rach and Amy during the break about this. I cannot believe the amount of criticism she's getting. And I couldn't figure out if it's because she's a girl and girls aren't supposed to act like that.
Could be.
Or if it's the generation, like younger generation, they don't like that stuff.
Both are true.
I have never seen anyone say those things about Michael Jordan. He did that every day.
Good point.
Every day. LeBron James does that stuff all the time. I cannot count. And I'm focusing on basketball more than baseball and more than football because it's very obvious when a basketball player is doing it.
Yeah.
Right? It's not subtle.
It's like watching someone in their living room.
Right. With a football player, they got a helmet on. You can't see their mouths moving. Baseball is so far away. Basketball, you can see it. So I'm only sticking to basketball. I have seen this my entire life. Larry Bird complained all the time.
Every play.
Every time something didn't go his way. This is nothing new, and that intensity is what makes her great. Mm-hmm. Now, there are times she needs to rein it in, and you guys see the video of her dad telling her to shut up because she was pulling all that stuff while they were up 20 points against Holy Cross in the first round.
And I'm glad you brought that up because I was wondering, because I don't watch basketball, I was like, okay, is that normal for a dad to yell, or is it like he can yell because... for whatever reason, like men feel like they can tell women, or no, guys, dads yell at the male players
too. Yeah, I mean, like, it's a mix. It's all over the board. There are parents that are too much into it, parents that are not into it enough, and then there are parents that know the timing.
Okay, going to take you to the press conference now.
And I'm the chair of the National Transportation Safety Board. Normally, our investigator in charge, his name is Marcel Muise, M-U-I-S-E. His first name is M-A-R-C-E-L. Marcel Muise is our investigator in charge for this investigation. But just given that we've arrived on scene today, it's very early. I've asked that he remain at the command post to continue what he is doing, so that I can brief you on what we're doing so far. Also with me is one of our newest board members. This is Alvin Brown, this is his training launch. So the NTSB arrived on scene at 6 a.m. To investigate an accident involving a Singapore-registered vessel with the name Dali, D-A-L-I, which made contact with the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, Maryland, at around 1:30 a.m. this morning. The vessel is 985 feet long. It's a 95,000 gross ton container ship. I've seen information about crew members on board. We still need to verify the numbers of crew on board and their status. Under our memorandum of understanding with the Coast Guard, the NTSB is leading this investigation. The Coast Guard will support this investigation. Our memorandum of understanding, for example, provides for when an accident involves another mode of transportation and other factors, the NTSB will lead that investigation. Now, I want to thank the U.S. Coast Guard. We have a very cooperative relationship with the U.S. Coast Guard. I particularly want to thank Deputy Commandant for Operations, Vice Admiral Gauthier. I want to thank Admiral Gilbreth, who's commander of the 5th Coast Guard District, and Captain O'Connell, who's the sector commander. Before I go on behalf of the NTSB, I want to extend our deepest sympathies to those who have been affected by this significant event. The NTSB, as I mentioned, does many significant transportation events, not just aviation. We do accidents and incidents in marine safety as well, and of course with bridges and other highway infrastructure. And for this, there were many that were affected by this collapse, and our deepest sympathies go out to the families, loved ones, and others who have been affected. I'm going to get questions on fatalities and injuries, which I'm not going to answer. That is not something that the NTSB answers. I will refer you to local authorities on all of that information. What I can tell you is a search and rescue is still underway. So we are very hopeful, and again, our thoughts are with the families and their loved ones. Again, we got here at 6 a.m., and we are standing back to allow the Coast Guard and search and rescue to continue their search and rescue operations while we gather information from the command post. There is a lot of information that we can begin to collect. We have a team of 24 on scene, including Member Brown and me. The team of experts include experts in nautical operations, and what they're going to look at and begin to collect is information on vessel operations, safety history, safety record, the look at the owner, the look at the operator, and the look at the operations this day, today. They will also look at company policy, any sort of safety management system or safety management program will be looked at by them, and our human performance team as well. We have a human performance expert here. We have an engineering team. We have survival factors, and then we have a team here that is getting the recorders. We also have a highway safety team, our team out of the Office of Highway Safety, including structural engineers, bridge experts who will be here and are continuing to come in. We have a few here, and one or two others are coming in the next few hours. We also have our family assistance team on site, and our family assistance team works with those that were affected by a particular event, families, friends, and other loved ones, and they will help them get in touch with the resources they need while also providing them with the information that they need as we move forward with our investigation. This is a team effort. There are a lot of entities right now in the command post, all focused on search and rescue, as they should be. But I do want to, in particular, thank the Coast Guard, the Maryland Transportation Authority, police, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the Baltimore Fire and Rescue, and the Maryland State Police. I also know that there are others on scene I'm sure I have missed. For example, Army Corps of Engineers is here. A great deal of expertise, and all focused on what is very important, which is the people first. I have been in contact with my counterpart in Singapore. Director Chong is the director of the Transport Safety Investigations Board. The NTSB maintains relationships with our counterparts in other countries. Often and stay in close communication. So the director and I have been in communication many times before on safety, so it was a good conversation. He is sending some personnel here tomorrow. Also, personnel will be arriving from the Maritime and Port Authority of Singapore, who has the focus of being the regulator in Singapore. Now, it's not a lot of information that I can share at this time, and I know there's a lot of information that seems to be circulating. The NTSB doesn't speculate. We provide facts. And so there isn't a lot we can share right now because the focus has been on the people. However, if you know me, I like to provide information.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and pop out of this. I think we all learned what the NTSB doesn't do. That's about all we learned. So we're going to take a quick break right back on the DGS and KMOX. 152 DGS. Can I be just typical existential Dave about this ship and the bridge. We are so cocky and so just high in our own supply. And look, we've done a lot of amazing things, you know, like 2 million years ago, we stood up and walked, and it took us 2 million years to make the wheel. And then in like the last 100 years, we've gone from the Titanic to this 1,000-foot ship with hundreds of shipping containers on it. The most amazing technology, just the bridge itself, one of the longest expansion bridges in the world. I think the longest steel girder bridge we have in the United States. Like, we're just doing great. And then something, a fuse blows, or someone pushes red instead of green, or green instead of red. And then you have this enormous ship hitting this enormous bridge and, you know, taking lives. And it just really, to me at least, brings it home like, oh, that's right. We're really not the masters of our own fate so many times. And just think it, like, I've had ships hit the bridge in my life. Sometimes I'm the ship, sometimes I'm the bridge, usually the ship. But yeah, it's humbling in some way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, thoughts and prayers, the people who mm-hmm. are struggling or who lost their lives, and everything across. But just as sort of a philosophic view, every now and then a giant ship just hits a bridge.
Man, yeah. I think what's, I don't know, there's part of it is what informs my not sweating a lot of things, because there's just so much you can't control. Right? I mean, like, you know, it's a cliche, and, you know, people in sports say it all the time, just control what you can control. But that's all you can do. Like, you're right. Sometimes that stupid boat is going to hit the stupid bridge, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No amount of stress 10 days before is going to change it. Right? I mean, if an earthquake hits, it's going to hit. Like, no matter how much you're worried or not worried, it's going to happen.
Yeah. And I do think, like Dave said, it's humbling. And I wish sometimes we were more apt to acknowledge what we don't know and how we're opening all of these Pandora's boxes and cans of worms. Because think of this. We know boats. We're good with boats.
Been doing it a while.
They've been around for thousands of years.
We're good with bridges. Yeah. We're good. Bridges and boats.
Yeah.
Those are pretty old school. Look what just happened. And now we think we can go messing around with
intelligence.
Yes. Artificial intelligence and human DNA and you know, the designer babies and all these different things and cloning, and think, oh, no. We pretty much know all of the possibilities that could go wrong.
That's a good
I think
point.
Much more humility and science would go a long way.
Do you see the chromosome thing we did today? I think it was UPenn created for the first time ever artificial chromosomes, which above my pay grade to know exactly what the chromosome does. You know, it's been a while since seventh grade, but we got fake ones now.
I just keep the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell.
Right. Most of my knowledge is from Schoolhouse Rock.
I know.
I don't know. Do you think this kind of stuff lends to the rise of nihilism in our society? Because people are like, hey, no matter what I
do,
the boat's going to hit the bridge
at some
point.
I think Wheeler says it well. You control what you can control. There are people who were hurt or killed this morning who thought things were under control.
And they could be driving perfectly safe, going the speed limit, not cutting anybody off. And
going to work early.
Yep.
I think the six people that are missing are believed to be all construction workers who were on the bridge.
Oh, because they were doing their overnight work? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what those flashing lights were. Didn't realize there was actually construction happening on the bridge at night.
Yeah, they're doing cement work.
Ugh. I mean, and that this happened at 1:30 in the morning and not rush hour.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's another one.